Real College Podcast is presented by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and is a production of Radio K.
It's Real College Podcast. I'm Patrick Sharkey. Our show today in three parts is all about local business and the people who run them. The entrepreneurs of Minneapolis have set out to put their own spin on our local fair, but they'll be the first to tell you it wasn't always a smooth ride. Today we'll talk to three of these entrepreneurs to hear about their successes, their failures, and what they hope comes next. All of that and more on today's Real College Podcast, which starts right now. For almost 40 years, the Dinkytown Bookhouse has been buying and selling used books to students and other customers from around the city. Reporter Emily Allen met with the store's manager to discuss their recent move, how the business is faring, and of course, some talk about books.
We can't really do a local business show without mentioning Dinkytown. And how can we talk about Dinkytown without talking about the Dinkytown Bookhouse? Located on the second floor of Dinkydale in Dinkytown, this little bookstore has been buying and selling used books for a long time.
So the store is actually older than me. This is our 41st year in business. Last year was our 40th anniversary. I've been working here for roughly since roughly like 2007.
That's the store's manager, Matt. Last week we sat down to talk about the bookhouse, the history, the business, the people, and of course, the books. First off, the bookhouse hasn't always been on the second floor of Dinkydale. According to its website, up until 2013, the bookhouse had been located on 14th Avenue. That's literally just down the block from where they are now.
Well, I mean, the short story is that they decided, the family that owned the building, who also ran a grocery store called House of Hanson that had actually been there about 80-some years, sold the building to a developer who knocked the building down and built the student housing with the Starbucks and stuff. We did kind of give the developer a bit of trouble. Not that it would save us from having to move, but that because of the way that the project was created, it basically changed the zoning rules for Dinkytown, and that's why now you see a lot more projects proposed in the area.
Matt also talked about the historic value of the building they're in now, referred to as Dinkydale. Matt says Dinkydale is now protected by the Dinkytown Conservation District, and the second floor actually housed another bookstore before the 1990s called Dinkytown Antiquarian Books.
So Kristen, the original owner of the store, likes to say that this floor knows how to hold the books, which I guess is a little reassuring.
The building isn't the only thing with historic value. The books inside are also significant. Here's Matt on their rare book collection.
The most interesting thing we've acquired recently actually came from a longtime Dinkytown resident and poet who passed away, and we ended up with his book collection. And he had a copy of a book written by the man who assassinated President Garfield. The version he had was published before he assassinated Garfield. What else do we have? Oh, we have, it's gone down in numbers now, but we have a collection of books that belong to Alexander Hamilton's grandson. At some point in the 19th century, moved from New York to Wisconsin, Milwaukee. And the books kind of got passed through his family and then onto a neighbor, and then that neighbor contacted us, and we've been selling them on a kind of consignment arrangement with that neighbor's family.
But the bookhouse isn't just a collection of rare Hamilton family writings and books by president assassins. They also have fiction, textbooks, science fiction, language, philosophy, history. It made me wonder,
are there any books that you won't take, or is there like a criteria for books that you will take based on like genre or the, like, I guess the condition of the book?
Condition's a big deal. We don't buy romance novels, but that's probably the only like genre I could say that we definitely don't buy.
It turns out, moldy books and romance novels aren't the only thing that the bookhouse has a beef with.
I was talking with a guy out there and I heard, I don't know, a problem about like shoplifting. Is that a problem for bookstores or?
It's frustrating. In a way, I understand the impulse because I've been broke and wanting stuff, wanting cool stuff, or wanting things to read, or maybe needing things to read for a class. But yeah, we're struggling like everybody else. You know, we're paying our bills, but it's kind of a bummer when you discover that, because usually it's way after the fact. I'll just give the person the benefit of the doubt that they're going to read it and enjoy it, which is part of the mission of this store, although it's missing the other third crucial mission of this store, which is to sustain our livelihoods. But yeah, it's, you know.
Aside from a couple of bad shoplifting apples, the bookhouse has had more than its fair share of really cool customers, too.
We have people who have been coming here longer than I've worked here. You know, it's funny when they sell us books or, you know, and it's when it's like a clearing out situation, you know, when we go to their house and like half the books have our old prices in them and stuff like that. But yeah, definitely have regulars. I have a lot of strange conversations on a daily basis with people. And you get, you know, you kind of get to know what they're into. Some folks we even like will set aside books just because we think, oh, like this guy probably wants this book. So we'll set it aside even if they haven't asked for it.
But the biggest bookworms in the store aren't just their regulars. They're the employees.
Yeah, my own personal collection has expanded quite a bit beyond what I've, you know, I'm going to need like a year or two in solitary confinement in order to like get through what I've picked up from here. But
the bookhouse in Dinkytown is located on the second floor of Dinkydale at 1316 4th Street Southeast in Dinkytown. They also have an online catalog of their books at dinkytownbookhouse.com if climbing a staircase doesn't really sound appealing to you. For Real College Podcast, I'm Emily Allen.
Olha que coisa mais linda, mais cheia de graça. Ela, menina que vem e que passa. Num doce balanço, caminho do mar. Moça do corpo dourado, do sol de Ipanema. O seu balanço.
Every West Bank foodie was biting their nails while watching the dispute between Afrodeli and the African Development Center of Minnesota. Following the dispute about building ownership, Afrodeli eventually closed the doors to its West Bank location, but is now making the move to Stadium Village. The new location is slated to open in the first few months of 2017, and so today we thought we'd take a look back at how Afrodeli began. Here's Emily LePain with the story, which first aired in 2016.
Can I get a lamb gyro with fries?
After immigrating to the United States from Djibouti in 1996, Abdirahman Kahin, owner of Afrodeli, never really intended to enter the restaurant business.
I think it was more about an accident. I never been cook. I was never thought that one day I'll open a restaurant, you know, when I was growing up.
Kahin, born in Somalia but raised in Djibouti, came to the U.S. and settled in Minneapolis, home to the largest Somali community in the country. He ended up opening his own media production company, but soon lost interest and instead began attending St. Thomas University for business classes.
I went there because when I opened the restaurant, I had to learn how to really manage.
After finishing St. Thomas's mini MBA program, Kahin had a better understanding of the business world he wanted to enter.
I understood a lot of process behind, you know, running a restaurant. They don't teach how to run a restaurant, but they teach how to run a successful business. So all I did, I just like applied the process running, you know, successful business.
But Kahin's main inspiration behind Afrodeli was the lack of accessibility of most Somali restaurants to the general public in the Twin Cities.
But when I came to Minnesota, I used to go to Somali restaurants or Ethiopian restaurants, and those restaurants had really good food, but it was only for the community.
Tukahin, Somali cuisine was an opportunity to bridge a cultural gap.
I know there are a lot of Somali community, Somali restaurants, but Somali food too mainstream, there were none. Nobody was, targeting or inviting the mainstream.
Kahin thought inviting in the general public would bring a whole new diverse clientele.
In the West Bank, it's a very, very rich, and diverse neighborhood. So I knew Somali food would have been, welcomed.
Kahin opened Afro Deli in Minneapolis in February 2010 and recently opened a new location in St. Paul earlier this year. But for Kahin, Afro Deli is just getting started.
You know, we want to grow realistically because restaurant is not easy to just duplicate, especially our concept. But right now we are building the recipe to replicate. And my hope is to grow, from Minnesota, then regional, then maybe nationwide, maybe go to also Africa. It's one of the options. I came to the States because of the opportunities and because what the U.S. represent in the world, because of education, because of, a lot of things that you cannot get anywhere else in the world. That's my driving, motivation, learn a lot from here and then take it back so I can show how America is a place where they can help the rest of the world.
For Real College Podcast, I'm Emily LePain. You're listening to Real College Podcast, and I'm Jacob Maldonado with Word on the Street. On Wednesday, January 25th, Bear's Den will be playing a show with special guest Gil Landry. The show starts at 7, and tickets start at $18. Bear's Den consists of Andrew Davey and Kevin Jones. The duo has a fondness for 70s and 80s rock, which they mix with their folk influences. Here is their song, Sophie. Friday, January 27th, POS is having an album release show at 7th Street Entry. Tickets are sold out, but there will be another show in March for his album. The new album Chill Dummy marks Steph's comeback after some health issues that have plagued him in the last few years. Here's How We Land featuring Justin Vernon of Bon Iver. So this is the first we know that we are so content to sleep when we land. We're so sick, we hit the cheese and we skip the plan. We know attention, no resentment, never even doubt a week or end. Get some comfort from the cameras and we hold each other close as we can. Wait, 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 wait. Worst thing
things have happened to better people. That's the mantra. The feelings are over with. Sick pout kissed, but no frown flip missed it. We're dealing with oceans. Big fish, bigger hooks. No coast road. Coaches don't go quiet. Keep them alarms loud. Let them look. No harm meant. Friction in the gaze. They're easier. Fade to another place. Why stay? Ain't no sense in mending any fences they break. Only taking when there's things to take. All away.
Also on Friday, Sarah White and Eric Mason will be playing a show at the George Latimer Library for the ongoing series Loud at the Library. Tickets are $10 and the show starts at 7. Sarah White is a world traveler with a recent project including traveling to Cuba and recording in Havana. Here is Create Found. Real College Podcast. I'm Jake Maldonado, and this was Word on the Street.
Hi, how are you?
Great, how are you?
Good, good. What can I get for you?
I would love a veggie torta.
Veggie torta?
With extra mushrooms.
Extra mushrooms.
This is Manny Gonzalez. He's the owner of Manny's Tortas, a gourmet Mexican sandwich shop born out of his love for cooking.
It's kind of like a passion that I have for the food. So I think that's what I choose to do what I do.
Manny's passion for cooking started when he was young.
Well, I'm from a small town in Mexico called Mexico City, only 25 million people. I grew up in a family that food is an event. And I remember seeing my grandmother and my mom cooking in the kitchen and helping them. That kind of grew on me.
Did you have any favorite foods to eat or to make with your mom and grandma?
Yes, all kinds of food. But one of the items that we really love, it was the torta.
As a young adult, Manny interned as a chef at a hotel restaurant that was popular with tourists. He had hoped to be hired by the restaurant afterwards, but there was one problem.
I asked for a job, and they told me that no, I cannot get a job because I didn't speak English. I thought, well, let's learn English.
So he went to the American Embassy, and it was there that he first learned about Minnesota.
So they showed me this booklet, and in the booklet, you can tell all the universities of the United States that they teach English as second language. So I saw Minneapolis, St. Paul, and I saw pictures of 10,000 lakes, sunny, beautiful. So I thought, oh, I want to go there. Of course, they never show you the winter time.
Manny moved to Minnesota in 1982, and like many immigrants, Minnesota's winters were a shock.
Well, the winter definitely was a big challenge because, at the same time, it was beautiful to see something that you never see. I remember when it snow, you know, first thing I went outside and I opened my mouth because I couldn't believe it was snowing from the sky.
After learning English and going to culinary school at Hamline University, Manny was faced with a decision.
My thought was just to learn the language and come back to Mexico and work for a hotel. But, you know, I came over here and I fell in love with Minnesota. I think it's one of the nicest states in the United States.
So he decided to work for a catering company for 10 years until he heard about a Latino market opening in South Minneapolis, where the Latino community was growing.
So I thought, well, I want to open my own restaurant. So I apply, and they love it, you know, because my concept was tortas. And in that time, a lot of people, they didn't know what tortas was.
I wasn't exactly sure what a torta was myself, so I decided to visit one of Manny's shops, where he showed me how to make one.
Okay, so we're going to get a French bread, and we're going to put a little butter and beans and throw it on the grill, and we let it cook. We saute the mushrooms. We put avocados, then tomatoes, jalapeno peppers, and lettuce, and chipotle mayonnaise. Oh, this is so good. I only don't want to just bring my product to the Mexican people or the Latino people. I want to bring it to everybody, you know, and I even think about it to modify like the sandwich, you know, for the American people. But I thought in myself, then I say, if I do that, they're not going to be authentic. And I thought, no, I'm just going to have authentic Mexican sandwich.
The concept was a hit. After 2 years, Manny was able to open a second location on Lake and 27th Street. And in 2005, he was told about an international market being built on Lake Street and was invited to open a third shop there at the Midtown Global Market. But despite his popular sandwiches, his business has not been without struggle.
This is not an easy business. It has been like a roller coaster.
One of the low points of this roller coaster ride was when Manny had to close his shop on Lake and 27th Street.
At some point, it was really hard because I have three restaurants going, and one of them, because the construction, it was losing money. And, you know, and one of the hardest decisions, it was to close that one.
But around the time he closed that shop, he was given the opportunity to apply for a booth at the Minnesota State Fair. He was denied many times, but after applying every year for 10 years, he was finally accepted. Now Manny's business has grown so popular that it's gained national attention. He's even won several awards, such as Entrepreneur of the Year. But I was curious to see if all of this fame and all of the hard work Manny's had to put into his business has its consequences.
Well, yeah, it does, because exactly, it takes a lot of time. And my personal life, this is my personal life, the restaurants. You know, I'm not married. I don't have kids. So that I put all my energy and everything in the restaurants.
Though Manny doesn't have a wife or kids, that's not to say family isn't important to him. One of his brothers moved to Minnesota shortly after Manny did and was followed later by his other brother, then his sister, and finally his parents.
Every birthday, every celebration, you know, we have dinners. My mom cooked, you know, and we just spend time with them.
Do you still like to cook with your mom like you did when you were little?
Yes, we cook together. Even here in the Midtown Global Market, I do a class called Cinco. It's in Cinco de Mayo, where we call the class Cinco de Manny. We have like a Mexican dinner, and my mom comes and cooks with me.
That was Danielle Corby reporting for Radio K. And that's all we have for you this week. Contributing to today's show was Danielle Corby, Emily Allen, Emily LePayne, and Jacob Maldonado Medina. Real College Podcast is produced by Jacob Maldonado Medina, Max Fuller, Emily LePayne, and Emily Allen. The show is edited by me, Patrick Sharkey. Radio K's Real College Podcast airs every Monday night at 6:30 on RadioK.org, and old episodes can be heard there as well. Plus, be sure to subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Patrick Sharkey. Thanks for listening.